It's time to take the quiz.
5 questions, 5 minutes a day, 5 days a week.
Take the quiz every weekday at thequiz.fox and then listen to the quiz podcast to find out how you did.
Play, share, and of course, listen to the quiz at thequiz.fox.
This is the Fox News Rundown Extra. I'm Dana Perino. David Bahnsen works hard and is very successful at what he does. He is the founder and managing partner of his wealth management firm, the Bahnsen Group. Before launching his own firm, he spent years at Morgan Stanley and UBS. Barron's, Forbes, and others consistently name Bahnsen as one of the top financial advisors in the country. He's also a best-selling author. His latest book is Full Time, Work, and the Meaning of Life. I recently spoke to David on the Fox News Rundown about his book, America's Shifting Attitudes About Work, and his unique take on how one can find a balance between life and work. We made some edits for time for our weekday version of the podcast and thought you might want to hear the whole thing. Thanks for listening, and if you haven't already, please subscribe to the weekly Fox News Rundown podcast. You can also find my podcast, Perino on Politics, every Monday by going to foxnewspodcast.com. Now, here's David Bahnsen on the Fox News Rundown Extra. David, thank you for being here. I was intrigued to learn more about full-time work and the meaning of life after I heard you on the Editor's Podcast, which is with Rich Lowry and our friends over at National Review. And you sounded so passionate, and I felt like something may have happened in your life, or maybe you got enough questions when you said, I'm going to write this down so that everybody can get my thinking. Was there a straw that broke the camel's back moment?
I think it's like a combination of straws where, you know, for myself, first of all, just at a young age in life, work was such a therapeutic diversion through a difficult thing. My dad died when I was 20. He was 47, and he was like my hero. Mm. And my mom was already gone. And so I just started adult life working, and work was a healthy, therapeutic way to kind of get through that, and gave me purpose, gave me something to channel my energies in. So I felt strongly about it. And then as I've worked and worked throughout my career, I've constantly felt this bizarre dynamic that people in our society seem really hesitant to be judgmental of those that don't work, but they sure don't mind judging people that do work. You know, you all constantly hearing the fury of you work too much and so forth. And then it was COVID. It was just the COVID moment. Everyone looking for every excuse they could to not go back to the office. And you hear all the time how depressed everybody is, how alienated they are, how polarizing things are. And I think, yeah, I think a job might help that sociological dynamic.
Let's go back a little bit. So what did you do? What did you first start doing when you were 20? What were you working in? How did you decide, or how did you know what you wanted to do?
I had no idea what I wanted to do. I couldn't do what I wanted to do because my dad had a PhD in philosophy. He was this brilliant Christian intellectual. And I wanted to be a thinker, but I also wanted to make money. And I had no path to go to college or any of these things. I had friends that were in a band. I started managing their band. I didn't know how to do it. I just worked and worked and worked, and I sold the company, made money, and, you know, it gave me something to do for those years. I got to a point where I didn't really want to deal with band members anymore, so I got to change what I was doing. But by then, I had a lot of self-confidence. I had accomplished things, and I got through that difficult period of life. Mm-hmm. And then, yeah, I went into Wall Street, began a career in finance. I'm skipping over a lot of years quickly, but that was pretty much the path, and I wouldn't recommend it for everyone, but it worked really well for me.
Listen to the all-new Brett Baer podcast featuring Common Ground, in-depth talks with lawmakers from opposite sides of the aisle, along with all your Brett Baer favorites like his all-star panel and much more. Available now at foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
So I do feel that I love to do mentoring. I feel I'm a little bit out of my depth on two particular questions. One is this idea of a work-life balance. Mm. And there's an obsession with this question, like, how do you get the perfect work-life balance? And I get the sense, especially with younger women, that they look at their peers and they think, oh, she's got it all figured out.
Yeah.
I had that happen recently where this young woman wanted an update on her mentoring. You know, she used to be a young mentee of mine, and now she's got a pretty high-powered job, but about to have a family. And she said, I'm just worried and worried. And she said, I look at this other colleague of ours, and everything's going so well in her life. And I said, are you kidding me? Do you know how often that young woman comes in my office? And I said, everybody is going through something. And to me, the work-life balance is something that there's just no perfect answer to. And I just work. Like, I love work, and I'm very fortunate. I love what I do. I love the people that I work with. I don't know how to have more balance. I actually feel like my life is balanced. So I don't know how to answer that question. And I heard you talking a little bit about it on The Editors. I wonder if you could do that for us here.
Well, I can, because the whole question is kind of what bothers me. I mean, the answer becomes problematic because I think the existence of work-life balance is a mirage. First of all, I make the argument that work is a vital and integral part of our life. So how do you balance something that's a part of your life with your life? And I ask people, and I'm being sarcastic, but it's a good point. How many of you go home and say to your spouse, sorry, honey, I'm working on marriage life balance tonight. I can't really talk to you right now. It wouldn't go very well. We don't balance marriage with our life. It's a part of our life. Work is a part of our life. Children, church, community, whatever the different things are. And so this myth of a compartmentalization that you can do a perfect asset allocation, in the book I use the analogy of a closet, that you're just going to have a section of shirts and a section of sweaters and, you know, your closet just comes out perfect in the end. No, sometimes closets are messy. Sometimes you're short on certain clothing items and other times you can't find things. For me, there have been a lot of times in my career, I have three children. I like to think I've done okay with them. But, you know, there were times I did not come home for dinner because I had to work late. And there were times where I was leaving the office to go to a kid's soccer game or school event. That's just life. But I think this is a kind of a millennial concept of work-life balance that I don't blame them for coming up with, because the baby boomers told them there was something called retirement where you can check out altogether for 30 years. So if you're going to end your life in a 30-year vacation, I guess you're entitled to have the balance of yoga class at 4 p.m. Mm-hmm. But I don't think that's the way life works or is supposed to work. I think we're supposed to be productive all the time and integrate these various components and values and priorities into our day-to-day routine. It's seasonal.
What do you tell people who say, yeah, okay, well, I get that, but my boss, you know, is a monster and contacting me at all hours of the night and don't understand, he or she doesn't understand that I need some time. What do you do with a boss like that?
Well, it's funny because the technology is a big problem now, right? Even for myself, I am my boss running my own business, and yet it's very difficult to unplug. So it takes discipline. It takes habits. These days, bosses are sort of begging for trouble because they know they kind of can't do that. Like, I sort of wish I could have connectivity with people over weekends and evenings more, but you sort of aren't allowed to. But it's a conversation one has to have with their employer and just set boundaries. But I would say it's boundaries two ways. Like, the notion of I will not look at my phone after hours, there's no free lunch, as we say in economics, that you can do that and maybe the boss will honor it. You're probably not going to be climbing the ladder the way you want. So there's a sense in which you have to be available for the advancement of the company if you're vested in its success. But at the same time, the boss needs to respect your boundaries that when you are with kids and things like that. These things are not rocket science. I mean, we all figure out a way to make it work, but you have to communicate.
That's the thing. My husband has always told me that every problem in every office or organization where there's a problem, it came down to a miscommunication or a lack of communication. So communication being so important. The other issue that I have a hard time talking with young people about is going into the office. Now, a lot of people want to be in the office, and some of these jobs are not in the office. Yeah. I know a young woman who left a job because she never was allowed to go into the office. Yeah. I know a young man who went into the office every day. Nobody else did.
Yeah.
But his parents said, you will go in. He went in every day, and guess what? He met the top boss in the elevator who said, huh, you're in the office? He says, yes, sir, every day. Turns out he gets invited to the weekly meeting now because he was in the office. And I just feel that I understand commutes are terrible. We got a problem of infrastructure in the country. But the importance of being around people and being there for the meeting in the hallway or the out of sight, out of mind issues that are going on, are a concern to me, and I don't know how to advise people on that.
Well, the first thing I say is, because the appendix of my book is about this, I feel very strongly, and I was writing about it all through COVID. I was on Fox and Friends talking about it one day.
Mm-hmm.
And I wrote a letter to every CEO on Wall Street. And it's funny, there's a lot of kind of baby boomer CEOs. You, Jamie Dimon at JP Morgan, David Solomon at Goldman Sachs, they've wanted everyone back. The city here in New York seems very crowded. Other cities, not so much. But what I say to younger people, which is what you're asking about, is do you do good work? And they say, yeah, I work hard, whether I'm remote or in the office. I'm working hard. I say, if you're doing good work, would you like anyone else to see it? Do you want to be seen? Do you want to be noticed? Do you want to have a chance meeting with the boss in the elevator? For me, I think it's incredibly selfish of Gen X and baby boomers, because every one of us was mentored by people. And I was mentored by people in the hallway, mm-hmm. in the coffee room, you know, walking up and down. And so in finance, it's research with analysts, with traders, with advisors, with clients. It's real time. So it's been a huge competitive advantage for our business that clients can come in and see us face to face. But just as much as some people don't want to go in, there's a lot that are craving the community and the collaboration. And it's become a hiring advantage for my firm that we're 5 days a week in office. I really believe that most people want that energy. There's certain sectors, certain industries, it's a little different. But look at all the companies that said they were done in office, and now they've all brought everyone back. The really cool tech companies that have gone back on what they said, Google, Apple, Amazon, Facebook, media companies, Netflix and Disney, they all have everybody coming back. And so I know they're trying hybrid and so forth, but the three words I use are brand, collaboration, and culture. You can't build culture on a Zoom in yoga pants from your bedroom. And if everyone's just being honest, they're not working as hard 5 days a week. They're just not. Mondays are maybe a little bit. Fridays probably barely at all. And then they're trying to double up Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. It's no way to run a business.
Bernie Sanders, a senator from Vermont, suggests that we should go to a 32-hour work week. And it's almost as if he thinks the government has helped people get to a point that he could suggest that. Well, I mean, actually, that's not how this works, sir. But what do you think about the idea of a 4-day work week?
You know, what's so interesting, as a lifetime conservative, I'm so used to being accused of being the elitist. And I thought it was one of the most elitist things I'd ever heard, because he said, well, AI has made it that we can do things more efficiently. And I was just wondering if he wants to say that to the blue collar people that work at laundromats and our busboys service business. This was the whole thing during COVID policy. It was really cute ideas for certain people, but it wasn't going to work for others that have to punch in, punch out. They can't do it in 32 hours. And people paid hourly, they don't want that. So he suggesting something for a certain segment, a more managerial, mid-level, white-collar profession. First of all, the entrepreneurs and risk-takers society are never going to do it. Okay, it's just, it's not in their DNA. My wife would not let me work 32 hours. She would be forcing me out of the house to go find something to do. So it's totally unrealistic. It's statist, but it also misses the point of why we work. It is not merely that we can work less, so we should. I believe that God made us to work. I believe he gave us purpose and dignity in work. So the presupposition of a Vermont senator that what we're all trying to do is work less is, I think, incredibly arrogant and misguided. He doesn't reflect a good understanding of the human person.
What do you tell people about retirement and full-time work and the meaning of life?
I believe in the concept of financial freedom and financial security. And if that's what someone means by the word retirement, then I'm all for it. Mm-hmm. But what I do not believe in is the notion at which you cut yourself off from useful, productive activity. For a lot of people, the thing they're best at that fills their cup the most is what they did for a 30, 40-year career. So when someone says, well, yeah, I'm retired now, I don't go in the office anymore, but I volunteer at church once a month or something, I always say, of course, that sounds great. No one's going to tell you you can't do that or shouldn't do that. But, like, are you as good at building an orphanage in Mexico as you were at running a law practice? Like, it just strikes me that usually what we're best at is what we did in our careers. And so I think we're losing talent in the workplace. I also recognize, you know, my friend Ben Shapiro got in trouble for this comment about people working into later years, and people were saying, well, what about blue-collar people work with their hands? And they completely missed his point. I recognize that there's different ages and stages, and I'm not suggesting that a 70-year-old be out on a street as a cop chasing down bad guys, but I think that there's still useful activity. to be found. All I'm trying to work backwards from is the concept of ending your life on a 30-year vacation. I don't think it's a good idea. I don't think it's a good idea for the person, the retiree, but I don't think it's a good idea for any of us that benefit from their wisdom, expertise, and experience. Those are the things we want in the workplace. And I don't think the 25-year-olds know everything. And I think the 65-year-olds have a certain degree of wisdom that we want in the workplace. So maybe they work less hours. They have more time with their grandkids and sailboats and walking on the beach with their spouse and all that. I'm all for those things. But no, not to end your life where that's all you do. I think it cuts you off from useful activity.
Zoom way out and talk to me about where we are right now with the culture of work and our own national competitiveness in a very interesting time with the technological revolution and our adversaries on the march.
So everybody says that China's our adversary, but we don't act like it when it comes to work because we say we want to work less and they want to work more. It's a very good thing that Europe has not been a very worthy adversary when it comes to economic productivity because they've long ago kind of given into this idea of less work. I think that America has to gauge itself against what it's capable of, its own productive capacity. And we're underperforming what we can be as a country. We can be more economically productive. The largest segment of that is men that are between the ages of 20 and 49. 55 plus, there's a certain amount that have retired. We've talked about that. But that number isn't going lower. The labor participation force bruise, as I see it, is not with women at all. And it's largely with men. And I think that this notion of prime working age men that are living at mom's basement till they're 30-something years old, I think it needs to stop. It's not good for the soul of society. It's not that I want to shame them or insult them or make fun of them, but it's that I care about them. And I don't think that they are living the full, fulfilled life they're capable of.
Can you talk just a little bit more about your biblical view of this? Because a lot of people don't, you pick up a self-help book on work or mentoring, you don't see that all the time. And I think that that is a unique, you are a person who is willing to talk about your faith. Yeah. Not everybody's willing to do that. Right. And to talk about it even within the world of business. And for people who are maybe looking for a little bit of answers to the world of work and what they should be doing and what their purpose is, can they find it in some place like the Bible?
Well, I think that's the place I find it. And I believe that anyone who wants to will find it there. We start with kind of where a person who believes in the Christian faith as I do, we believe God created the world and he told us why he created us. He said that, these beautiful things he created were all good. The sun and the moon and the stars and the animals and the plants, they're good. And then he said on the last day, he made man and women, and he called humankind very good. And why the extra adverb for us? He made us to be made in his image, to work, take care of the garden, to multiply, fill the earth, to subdue the earth. We now are in charge of the kind of ecosystem of earth. That means work. We were to name the animals. That's creative work. And caring for this garden. Now, a lot of things happened, and this is kind of, for a Christian, the story of life. But none of those things disrupted what he made us to do. So we find useful purpose. I love the fact that everybody has different talents, skills, passions, because everyone's made by God differently. I think it's a beautiful reality. God cared about each person individually enough to make us different. And that can be reflected in our vocational callings and what we do with work. But what God didn't do is make half of us to work and half of us to shop, or half of us to wait for the productive work of others. All of us are made with dignity. All of us are made in his image, and therefore with a responsibility, but a blessing to work and be productive.
Beautiful. I have a few short questions, if that's okay. What question do you think every manager should ask in a job interview?
Why are you looking for this job? I think the reason I say that is if the person's answer is, I just want a job, that's okay. Put it on the table. Everyone needs a paycheck, but have them say it. Whereas someone comes into the interview and says, oh, because I saw what you did in this venture, I read this story about you. If they've done a little homework, it's a great discovery question.
How do you approach or advise people, because I think you've already done this very well, but the balance of investing and saving for the future versus say, you know, not just paying your bills, but enjoying the present.
Financially, you mean?
Yes.
I think you have to save off the top. It's the only way the government gets paid is they tax you off the top. The only way you get paid is you save off the top. So it's funny how these 401k things caused retirement balances to skyrocket higher. Live off percentages and put the mechanisms in place to make yourself do it. I mean, some people live paycheck to paycheck, but where there is excess, get debt free and then be able to save 10, 20%.
Do you have advice for young people on renting versus owning shelter?
Well, right now they've made it almost impossible for them to own shelter
right.
because of the high cost. And so I recommend that they tell their governor and local city council to allow more houses to get built.
Right.
It's one of the most shameful things economically in our country is the lack of supply of housing that has made housing unaffordable for otherwise gainfully employed people.
How do you... let me back up. Is there any advice that you would give your younger self or something that you wish someone had told you back then?
God, I keep messing up this answer because it's such a good question. And there's so many things, you know. I think that I, in different moments, wish I had worked even harder. And in different moments, I wish I had unplugged more, been more present. I don't regret the time I've spent working, but I regret some of the quality of time that I didn't have with family. Like I was there, but like I was still distracted. I wish I'd done a better job at getting focused and mentally present with my wife and children all the time.
I have the same answer, like especially in school, because I was smart enough to know how to get out of doing physics.
Yeah.
And I actually didn't do a lot of intellectual reading until later on after I've gone to Washington, D.C., where I had to then do that at that point. I love reading novels. I've read all the literature. I love all of that. But some of the deeper reading I hadn't done, and that would have served me well. I did it later. But I also wish someone had told me not to worry so much. Because I do think that even though I was working hard, I just worried in my 20s, and I always want young people not to worry their young life away. My last question then for you is, how do you define success? And has that evolved throughout your life?
It definitely has. I turned 50 next month, and I'm thinking about it even more these days. Aristotle talked about the good life. There's a concept that gets floated around about common good. There's a biblical idea of shalom. But I use the term human flourishing, and I believe it is both a material and spiritual, a physical and immaterial component where we have joy, peace, and harmony.
Beautiful. David Bonson, thank you.
Thank you, Dana.
You've been listening to the Fox News Rundown. And now, stay up to date by subscribing to this podcast at foxnewspodcasts.com. Listen ad-free on Fox News Podcasts Plus on Apple Podcasts. And Prime members can listen to the show ad-free on Amazon Music. And for up-to-the-minute news, go to foxnews.com. New from the Fox News Podcasts Network.
I'm Dana Perino. Join me for season 3 of my limited time podcast, Everything Will Be Okay, based on my best-selling book of the same name. Make sure you subscribe to this series wherever you download podcasts and leave a rating and review.
From the Fox News Podcasts Network.
Hey there, it's me, Kennedy. Make sure to check out my podcast, Kennedy Saves the World. It is 5 days a week, every week. Download and listen at foxnewspodcast.com or wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.